This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. 20 and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Diehard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly filling in for the great Anthony Pepe and friends once again here on this Friday night. We're coming to you live from the compound here in the Boston area. And you know what? A rumor of sorts developed earlier this week involving your Boston Celtics. This rumor was actually tweeted out in the form of a report at 2:31 in the morning Monday by ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski when he said the Seas had emerged as one of the top teams engaged in talks for a potential deal involving none other than Kevin Durant. Then Shams Charania of The Athletic reaffirmed the report at sunrise and even added details to it, saying, and I quote, "The Celtics offered Brown, Derek White, and a draft pick to the Nets for Durant," sources said. "The proposal was rejected, and Brooklyn has asked Boston in any proposal to include Brown, Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart, draft picks, and potentially one more player." So, listen to that. I immediately was met with excitement. I mean, first reaction, of course, I'm just a sucker for NBA offseason drama. Deal involving arguably the best player in the league with my favorite team? I was all ears. I've gone back and forth on this all week. Who has the most to gain from leaking this news to two of the NBA's most credible reporters? You'd have to think it's the Nets. Question is, why now? Is this the best deal they have received? If it is, that means you have to think that come the end of the summer, come September, October, you name it, Sean Marks and his team will be at a crossroads and may have to pull the trigger on the best deal possible, which makes me wonder, if I'm the Celtics or Brad Stevens in this instance, do I go through with it? Durant is signed through 2026 after agreeing to a four-year deal worth $198 million in 2021. He is coming off a season in which he averaged 29.9 points per game and 7.4 boards as well. However, he will be 34 years old by the time this season tips off and is quite injury-prone, having dealt with MCL and Achilles heel injuries in the past. Meanwhile, Brown still has 2 years left on his current contract and will be an unrestricted free agent in 2024. The Seas have time to repair their relationship with their star, but there have been rumors floating around Boston saying that Brown is disgruntled and could leave at the end of the deal. He recently signed with Kanye West and Donda Sports and was spotted with Kyrie Irving as well. Brown recently liked a tweet from a random fan account by the name of Bantonio Clown, which basically said in short order, Jaylen Brown is disrespected by Celtics fans. Pretty simple there. My thing here is Celtics have to figure out what Brown's commitment is. If he is committed, I think they should stick with him. If not, it's time to go after Durant. Keep it right here on the Diehards. We'll be talking some hockey with Evan Marinovsky of CLNS Media next and get his take on the offseason. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly. Our first guest of the night is an up-and-comer in the NHL media world. He covers the Boston Bruins for CLNS Media, and like myself, he too is a UMass grad, so you know you're getting the great takes. He is the man, the myth, the legend, Evan Marinovsky. Evan, how are you doing here on this Friday night?
I'm doing so much better now that I've had that intro. UMass, man, the myth, the legend, I don't think you can beat that.
I mean, you've been doing great work here in the community, so I might as well prop you up, right?
I appreciate it. One UMass alum helping out another.
Hey, that's how we do it in the community. Let's get right into it, though. Evan, I felt as though we should start with the hot-button issue Bruins fans have been asking for weeks now. What is happening with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci? Should we be concerned? I thought it was a fait accompli that they were both returning.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking this morning, I was expecting that news to come out at 12 p.m. On day one of free agency. Earlier this month, and it hasn't. I don't think it's worrisome, but I do think it's like, all right, what's the holdup here? I think there's a few things. I think one's the salary cap, whether or not, you know, they're going to have to either move some salary cap or some salary to free up some cap space. I think another thing is making the deal so they're more incentive laden, and you can kind of push those salary caps onto, you know, next year when you're going to have a lot more space. So I think those are probably the two things that are holding it up the most. I don't expect Patrice Bergeron to just straight up not come back. David Krejci, you know, again, he didn't play in the NHL last year, so you never know. But I would expect both to happen. I mean, I would be very shocked if they came out and were like, "Yeah, nothing." So I would expect something sometime. Yeah. And then I've given up like my what's it called, like when I think it's going to happen. I just think it'll happen. It just comes down to when.
Do you think they're correlated, and do you think that it's kind of like a domino situation here?
You know, I think it might be separate. It'd be weird if, you know, just David Krejci came back, just given that, you know, I think Patrice Bergeron, you know, Joe McDonald had reported about a month ago that Bergeron did plan on re-signing. So, again, I expect that to happen. I don't think David Krejci's like, oh, if Bergeron doesn't come back, I'm not coming back. I think it really comes down to just whether or not he himself wants to move his family back to Boston after moving them to the Czech Republic just a year ago. So I don't think it's going to be like a, hey, you know, if he doesn't come back, neither am I. I think it's more of, do they just want to do that? So that's, I think, more what it is.
What did you think of the Bruins and their decision to part ways with Bruce Cassidy this offseason?
I was not a fan of that. And I think, you know, a lot of people were not huge on that. I think ultimately, you know, that's the guy who has won them a lot of games over the past bunch of years. And truly, you know, he was an important part. You know, when you think back to 2017, when they were, you know, looking like they were headed for a full-blown rebuild when Claude Julien got fired. And, you know, they go to the playoffs, they go to the Stanley Cup final. So, again, I think they made the wrong call there. I think it probably, again, should have been the general manager or something in the front office, some sort of change. I think they got it right with Jim Montgomery. And we'll see. You know, again, Montgomery's going to be handed a really tough slate of cards in the fall without Marchand, without McAvoy, without Grizzlick. So it's going to be hard to judge him off of that. I think the safer judgment for him will be the entire year, not like 2 months in. You know, if they're 500 2 months in, I don't think we can be like, oh, Montgomery's terrible. What were they doing? I think, again, it comes down to the lineup he's given. And so that, I think that's what it's going to come down to. But back to Cassidy, yeah, I mean, I think they messed it up. Well, it's going to be interesting to see though how he does in Vegas, because that's a really tough situation out in Vegas. But I do think he'll be able to make it right.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there, and I was going to ask you, we were both at Jim Montgomery's opening press conference with the team, and I felt like there were definitely some storylines to glean from that, to say the least. What were your biggest takeaways?
You know, I think some of the big takeaways were that, you know, I think the ownership kind of put the firing of Cassidy on the front office, whereas in Sweeney's press conference talking about Cassidy getting fired, I felt the vibe of, like, it didn't directly come from him, so it felt like a little bit of a blame game there. And just, you know, interesting tidbits on, you know, connecting with younger players and trying to get more out of this roster. I mean, again, I think the real reason that Cassidy got fired, honestly, was they want more scoring and they want more from those younger guys. They feel that there's more to give from Stanika and Frederick and that their leashes were too short with Cassidy. And I think they expect Montgomery to have a longer one with them. So those were my biggest takeaways from that press conference, which is now like a month ago, or maybe not a month ago, but a few weeks ago. Felt like yesterday. I just realized it was actually kind of long ago. So, yeah, those are my biggest takeaways from that.
Yeah, July definitely has flown by this year. But did you like the hire? I think Montgomery's coaching style could definitely help the Bees defensively, especially in the short term with McAvoy potentially being out for the initial few months.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's a different brand. You know, Cassidy was a very quick-up guy, you know, get the puck out of the zone immediately, find that, you know, first quick pass and get out. Montgomery's more of a laid-back guy. He wants the puck. It's all about puck possession, which is going to be very interesting for a guy like Charlie Coyle, who's always been big on that, you know, being a puck possession line. So, you know, that might help out a Brandon Carlo, where instead of, you know, making a quick decision with the puck coming out of the zone, he's a little more poised. He kind of has time to read the situation. So they're going to be fast on teams, you know, on the forecheck and getting the puck back. And I think they're going to be very, you know, not very laid back, but I think that they're going to be a little more laid back than they were with Cassidy when they do have the puck. So, again, out of all the coaches that were out there and the names given out, Montgomery was the best one by far. So I think they got it right with that. It just comes down to, was it really worth firing Bruce Cassidy over? That's the question that I think the next year or two we're going to get the answer to.
Where does this Bruins team trend to begin the year after missing Marchand and McAvoy? Are they in danger of missing the playoffs?
You know, it's a great question. I think if they can tread water and be just above 500 when those three come back, I think they're in a good spot, because you look at the Atlantic, they're not touching Tampa. They're not probably touching Florida. Toronto's interesting with their goaltending, so that could be a real hole, but Toronto usually does score a lot of goals in the regular season, so I would expect them to still be really good. Ottawa's an interesting case. I don't think they're better than the Bruins, but they're going to be more competitive than they have been in the past couple of years. I think Detroit's still a year or two away. Montreal's far off. Buffalo, same thing. So So, and then you look at the Metro, the only team coming out of the Metro, are the only two teams now, Columbus and potentially Philly, as teams that didn't make it last year that could make a run for it this year. So it's really going to come down to what those other teams do. Does Columbus take a huge step forward with Johnny Gaudreau to the point where they're contending? You know, does John Tortorella, you know, fire up the Flyers to contend in the Metro and to make the playoffs? That's what it's really going to come down to. So again, if they can be above 500 when Marchand, McAvoy, Grizzlick, those three are back, I think they're in a good spot, because this team, as we've seen the past couple of years, is good for those second half surges where they separate themselves and put themselves in a playoff position. It's going to be tougher this year given the lineup and given the fact that they're going to be missing those guys to start the year, but I do think, I think it's realistic to think they'll probably make the playoffs this year.
I tend to agree. I've heard a lot of people, they all seem to think that they are a potential threat to miss it. I just think they're too talented to drop to the bottom half of the league, even with their injuries. Throughout the balance of the offseason, the Bees have been tied as potential candidate to lead to land Nazem Kadri. Should we buy those reports? How the heck can they make that work?
See, that's the one thing where it's funny. On paper, it makes perfect sense. Like, he would fit really well. Cam Neely would love a guy like Nazem Kadri. The problem is the money he might command. Now, again, you know, we saw today John Klingberg got a year and $7 million. $7 million is still a lot of money. But I think he was hoping for some more term. But for a guy like Kadri, he's going to get term. And I believe he's 30 right now, or 29. He's one of those two. And last year was just a monster year that he'd never really had before. So, again, fits the lineup, does not fit money-wise, because he's going to get paid. He will get paid. And, again, if the Bruins, even if Krejci and Bergeron don't return, and they say, all right, we're going in on Kadri, they still only have just over $2 million in cap space. And again, as I mentioned earlier, when you're over the cap, teams know that, and they can pick a Mike Riley off for a sixth-round pick, whereas Riley before would probably go for a third or another asset. So, again, I don't know how they make the money work. Even with LTIR, I really don't know how they do that, given that those guys are going to come off LTIR in early November or late November. So, again, it's a cool idea. It's a fun thing to think of, you know, Hall, Kadri, and Pasternak. But I just don't know how they make it work with the money, as you said. I don't know how they do it.
Well, Evan, I just wanted to thank you once again for joining us here on the Die Hards this evening. Where can folks find your work?
CLNS Media, and there's going to be some more career news coming. So everyone stay tuned. There's going to be some more coming. And, it'll be out soon, maybe. I don't know. I'm in no rush to – it's the off season. We can chill for a bit. So, but, yeah, Bruins, subscribe to Bruins Rinkside on YouTube. That's the one thing I'll say.
Ooh, this sounds exciting, man. Well, I know you're going to kill it wherever you end up. Just wanted to say thanks again for joining us here tonight.
Of course. Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time, Evan. There he is. That was Evan Marinofsky of CLNS Media. Keep it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network as we turn our attention to the Beantown Rundown next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Now time for the Beantown Rundown.
All right, boys, let's do this.
Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And we're back here on the Sports Map Radio Network. If you have a hot take and would like to join the conversation, the number to dial in is 1-800-224-2004. It's time for everyone's favorite segment here on the Diehards. It's time for the Beantown Rundown. We ask an expert a series of questions in advance, and they give us their hot takes. I'm proud to be joined by Jack Supino. Jack works with the WMEX Sports Department here in Boston and also is a studio manager with Boxford Public Access TV. He's also a diehard Celtics fan and an avid member of social media with plenty of videos and fan experiences to check out. Jack, are you there?
I'm here, Brendan. How are you?
I'm doing well on this Friday night. What about yourself?
I'm doing well as well.
All right, so Jack, I'm going to basically frame this for you pretty simply. I'm going to rattle off a few questions here. You just think about your takes, and then I'll read them back to you, and you fire them off. Got it?
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
All right, first question I have for you. The NBA rumor mill picked back up this week when multiple outlets reported that the Boston Celtics have emerged as one of the favorite teams to land Kevin Durant. However, the return that Brooklyn is reportedly seeking is Jaylen Brown, Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart, draft picks, and potentially one more player in any sort of deal. Green teamers are divided on this topic, but as a neutral NBA fan with no ties to either organization, who comes out on the winning end in that trade? Number two, the Jacksonville Jaguars signed veteran kicker Elliott Fry on Friday and cut rookie Andrew Mevis, who wildly missed three field goal attempts during training camp warm-ups including an errant kick that struck former Dallas Cowboys head coach Dave Campo. I ask you, what is the craziest moment that you have that you remember witnessing during a sports event or practice, and did anything unique happen to your recollection afterward? Question number three. Charles Barkley recently stated that he has decided to stick with Turner Sports after Greg Norman and his friends with LIV Golf with the LIV Golf Tour reached out about acquiring his services as an analyst. He backed out after raising concerns about his current network and chose sponsors being left in limbo during the process. Off the top of your head, who is an out-of-the-box personality that you would be curious to see the LIV Golf Tour chase next, and should they take the gig? Number four. Gardner Minshew, the backup Philadelphia Eagles quarterback famous for his slick mustache, recently lived the life of a transcendentalist, sort of. He purchased an old prison bus and took a long trip to clear his mind. Then he parked it outside of a gym when he returned to Philly and lived out of this vehicle for five consecutive months as he trained. His reasoning? It's Super Bowl or bust. Are we dealing with a determined athlete destined for greatness in this case? Do you find this move interesting, or is it just over the top? Number five. DK Metcalf recently signed a lucrative deal to stay in Seattle long-term, agreeing to a three-year extension worth $72 million. $58 million is guaranteed in the contract. However, his starting quarterback as of this moment is either going to be Drew Lock or Geno Smith. Do you like Metcalf's decision here? Number six, Buster Olney of ESPN noted that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim recently said that they have started listening to potential deals for Shohei Ohtani. I ask you, Jack, does Ohtani get moved at the upcoming MLB trade deadline? And last question, the Washington Nationals started auctioning off Juan Soto after he turned down a 15-year contract extension worth $450 million. As of tonight, most experts believe he could land with the Los Angeles Dodgers or the San Diego Padres. Where would you like to see Soto end up? All right, back to our first question. Jack, it's time for your answers. The NBA rumor mill picked back up this week when multiple outlets reported that the Boston Celtics have emerged as one of the favorite teams to land Kevin Durant. However, the return that Brooklyn is reportedly seeking is Jaylen Brown, Defensive Player of the Year Marcus Smart, draft picks, and potentially one more player in any sort of deal. Green Tamers are divided on this topic. Who comes out on the winning end in that trade, in your opinion?
Well, I think Brooklyn does. I mean, if you look at how well, you know, the Boston Celtics have played throughout this season, just not in just the playoffs, in the regular season, it comes down to, you know, who's going to really step up. And you have Marcus Smart being one of the glue guys, one of the guys that really glues this team together. You're giving up a lot to really kind of take him to Brooklyn. I mean, you're losing a lot of that awesome chemistry that the Boston Celtics have right now with Jaylen Brown and Smart, as they're starting to mesh together really well. You have Kevin Durant. He's a great player. He's a great basketball player, but it also comes down to how long is he going to play in the NBA and how is the Celtics going to work with him on that? I think that Brooklyn wins that trade more. I think that the Celtics, if they're going to have Kevin Durant, it's going to kind of mess up their chemistry.
You know, I still think you take the risk, but that's only if you know Jaylen Brown doesn't plan on staying long-term. If Jaylen Brown does express a desire to stay here long-term, you sign him to an extension and you try to keep him in town with Jason Tatum for a decade and win multiple titles. However, if he's not committed long-term, I say you pull the trigger and go after Durant and go all in for the next 2 years and try to win a title. Now,
only 2 years.
This is true, but then again, Jaylen Brown's also only under contract for 2 more years.
Right.
This is true. But then again, you also have the Marcus Smart side of it and a few other things. So I get it. I get why the Celtics are hesitant at first. But if Jaylen Brown isn't committed long-term, I move on. If he is, I don't do the deal. Pretty simple. Number two, the Jacksonville Jaguars signed veteran kicker Elliott Fry on Friday and proceeded to cut rookie Andrew Mevis, who wildly missed 3 field goal attempts during training camp warm-ups, including a wild kick that struck former Dallas Cowboys head coach Dave Campo. I ask you, what is the craziest moment that you remember witnessing during a sporting event or practice, and did anything unique happen afterward?
Well, I would go back. There's so many great moments in sports. I would go back to that Cody Parker missed potential game-winning field goal, that double doink on Sunday night's NFC wild card match with the Eagles, 10 seconds left on the clock. I mean, that was pretty wild to see that. You know, he just needed to make the kick, and he double doinked it. I mean, that's what I remember, you know, watching that football game, saying, oh my gosh, can't believe it. 10 seconds left in the game, and you have an opportunity to potentially win the game and blow it for your whole team.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, that kick will live in infamy in Chicago for sure. I'm trying to think of a few wacky ones myself. I was at the game where David Ortiz hit the game-tying grand slam against Detroit in the 2013 ALCS. Seeing Torrey Hunter fly over that bullpen wall and the fans going nuts was something to behold. But The wackiest moment, just in general, came during an NFL kickoff festival. The Patriots held one down in the Seaport before it kind of got gentrified and built up. Scott Zolak was running punt, pass, and kicking drills, and I lined up to punt. And I, too, had a wild punt, except this one went probably like 40 yards or so, flew out of the facility, and also, I believe, struck an older man in the head. So that was funny. But I don't think anyone else saw who actually kicked it, so I think I'm good to go there. Number three.
I hope Dave Campo's okay. I just wanted to say that.
Oh, I hope so, too. Number three, Charles Barkley recently stated that he has decided to stick with Turner Sports after Greg Norman and his friends with the LIV Golf Tour reached out about acquiring his service as an analyst. He backed out after raising concerns about his current network and shows sponsors being left in limbo during the process. Off the top of your head, who should the LIV Golf Tour go after next as an analyst?
I think they should definitely go after Tony Romo. I mean, I think that he's really the analyst that everyone really looks up to in sports. Even young kids look up to in sports to try to be a Tony Romo or something like Tony Romo to give all that, you know, different perspective and the different shot selections of a golfer. I think that would be really interesting to hear more about his kind of like play-by-play on that type of sport in golf.
You know what? I kind of like that because people have mixed opinions on Romo's broadcasting skills with football. However, he is an avid golfer, and he is very good with analytics and analyzing plays on the field. I think he could actually fit very well into that role. Good call. Number four, Gardner Minshew, the backup Philadelphia Eagles quarterback, famous for his slick mustache, recently lived the life of a transcendentalist of sorts. He purchased an old prison bus, took a long trip around the country to clear his mind, then he parked it outside of a gym when he returned and lived out of this vehicle for five consecutive months as he trained. His reasoning? It's Super Bowl or bust. Are we dealing with a determined athlete destined for greatness in this case? Do you find the move interesting, or is this just an over-the-top act?
I think it's really an over-the-top act. I mean, I think you got to be really focusing on football when you're in the NFL like that. I mean, I don't really know the guy, and, you know, I never will, but I think it really comes down to, you know, you got to train better. You got to be able to show a team that you are serious about this stuff. I mean, I think when he came out with the mustache and, you know, it was funny for a little bit, but I think it's time when Jacksonville's got Trevor Lawrence on the team, and, you know, Minshew's kind of dealing with a lot of different situations. He has to really take it serious. I think it's over the top.
I like Gardner Minshew. I just think he's a lightning rod and great for content. But I do agree with you. This was kind of a hard-o move, in my opinion. Let's see if it pans out. Maybe he somehow wins the starting job over Jalen Hurts this year and ends up leading Philly to greatness. We'll see. Number six,
right.
Or number five, I should say. DK Metcalf recently signed a lucrative deal to stay in Seattle long-term, agreeing to a three-year extension worth $72 million. $58 million is guaranteed in the contract. However, his starting quarterback as of this moment is either going to be Drew Lock or Geno Smith. Do you like Metcalf's decision here?
No, I don't. I mean, I get, you know, go where the money goes, but I don't like DK Metcalf's decision. I think that he could get a better deal somewhere else with even a better quarterback. I just think that he's just staying there to stay there. And I just don't think that that's going to be very beneficial in the future. And I look at him as a top wide receiver in the league. So I thought it would be better, honestly, if he went to the Chargers or if he went even to, you know, Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. That would be huge for him. But I don't really agree with his decision to stay there.
It was curious. I do like the fact he's getting all that money, though. We're at the two-minute warning, however, here, Jack, so I'm going to ask you to answer these two quick. Buster Olney of ESPN noted that the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim recently stated that they have started listening to potential deals for Shohei Ohtani. I ask you, Jack, does Ohtani get moved at the upcoming MLB trade deadline?
No, he does not. He will get moved next year.
Okay. I kind of have the same mindset. I feel like it's just too big of an ask at this stage. And lastly, the Washington Nationals started auctioning off Juan Soto after he turned down a 15-year contract extension worth $450 million. As of tonight, most experts believe he could land with the Los Angeles Dodgers or the San Diego Padres. Where would you like to see him end up?
I'd like to see him with the Dodgers. I think that team is exceptional right now, and I think that that'd be a great fit to add Soto to that team.
That'd be incredible. Just imagine that lineup. Holy smoke. Talk about the 1927 Yankees. Well, Jack, it has been a pleasure as always. I know you do plenty of great side projects in addition to your work with WMEX. Where can we find that?
You can find it on my page, Jack Sapino, on Instagram. You can find it on BoxerCableTelevision.com.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse through the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take
this is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back into another edition of the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly filling in for Anthony Pepe tonight from the compound here in the Boston area. Our next expert covers the Boston Celtics for CLNS Media, and he has been doing great work as of lately, especially with the Celtics going on that deep playoff run. He is Josue Pavone, and he joins us on the Progressive guest line now. Josue, are you there?
What's going on, guys? How are you doing?
How's it going, man? Let's begin with the hot news of the week. I think it's an obvious one. At 2:31 Monday morning, Woj put out the report that the Boston Celtics have emerged as a favorite to land Brooklyn Nets star Kevin Durant in a deal. Shams comes out a few hours later, doesn't refute the report. In fact, he adds to it, saying the Nets were hoping for more in a potential trade, with Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart being the centerpieces. I ask you, are you in favor of that deal on paper?
The one that was offered, or the one that they the one that the Nets are asking about?
The one that was countered with.
I'm not. I'm really not. And for a couple of reasons, obviously. I mean, we've all had plenty of time to sort of, you know, think things over and weigh out the pros and cons. And I think what it boils down to is the fact that, you know, the Celtics team was so close to winning the championship. Brad Stevens did a stellar job, arguably had, you know, the best offseason of any, you know, NBA GM at this point. And you want to see how this team's going to flourish. Now, if you're strictly talking about an upgrade between, you know, Jaylen Brown and Kevin Durant, and obviously there's other things in there too, right? There's a couple of players, whether we're talking about, a role player, right? A couple of role players, a handful of draft picks. I think that's something that Brad Stevens and the Celtics, maybe they weighed out and thought to themselves that, you know, this is our sort of take it or leave it offer. And I think that was the case for a lot of teams that were putting up their offers for Kevin Durant. And in terms of putting in someone like a Marcus Smart or Robert Williams, I just don't see the Celtics taking that step. I don't see the talks going that far. And listen, maybe this report was from a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it was within the last week or so, right? I mean, I've spoken to sources and the talks around, you know, people close to the situation, and it seems like an ongoing pattern that this is probably an offer that was made during a time when that, you know, a lot of teams are just sort of doing their due diligence. And listen, this is exactly what the Celtics should do, right? Any team that's in position to win a championship should check out what it would take to get someone like Kevin Durant. But in terms of the Celtics making a agreeing to the kind of offer that the Nets put on the table, I just don't see that realistically happening.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. I think this report probably was going around and the moves were being talked about a few weeks ago. I think it might have come out when Scalabrine was talking about it. That might have been when they first started occurring. And then maybe it was just a follow-up leak by Sean Marks or maybe Brad Stevens. Who knows? We'll see where that goes coming up. But I think the big question I think most Celtics fans find themselves asking is whether Brown or Durant is a better option for the foreseeable future. Honestly, I think the Celts would be better off keeping Brown with the caveat that he stays long-term and that he and Jason Tatum will be playing together here for years to come. But I think the team has to find out where he stands on that possible decision sooner than later. Otherwise, they'd be almost crazy not to make the deal.
Yeah, I think that's the part of this whole situation that makes the most sense, right? If you're not sure if someone like Jaylen Brown is going to sign long-term in a couple of years, then, yeah, you can see why the organization would want to take a risk on someone like Kevin Durant, arguably one of the greatest scorers of all time. You know, someone who, sure, he's up there in age. He's definitely not going to get much better at this point, but you have that 2 to 3 year window where you can compete for a championship. I mean, you put that team on paper, and I think that's a favorite to win the championship. But then even without Kevin Durant, this is what's most interesting and what's most fortunate about the Celtics organization is that the Celtics are still favorites to win the championship. So you have to, again, you weigh out the pros and cons. And if you're a Celtics, I mean, if you're an organization like the Celtics, you have to look into to what it would take to trade for someone like Kevin Durant. And honestly, I think that's what this is. It wouldn't shock me if this was sort of a report that the Nets are trying to muster up to get other teams to you know, loosen up the strings in terms of what they want to offer. Because, again, I really do believe that a lot of these offers that were in for Kevin Durant were either there were sort of these take-it-or-leave-it offers, and the Nets aren't satisfied at this point. The Nets sort of want to get this thing going and get this thing done but before a specific point, well before training camp. But I'm not quite sure that happens. I think it's going to be a lot harder than what Brooklyn anticipated.
I've heard some green teamers out there making crazy trade proposals and requests. Like they usually do. Man. You know,
they're going crazy right now, man. Like, yeah. It's been an interesting week, man. It was an entertaining week, I should say. You know, watching everything unfold.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the craziest ones. You're like, oh, can we get Kevin Durant for Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, and maybe 3 first-round picks in the future? Stuff like that. what would your preferred package for Durant be realistically if the Seas ultimately had to pull the trigger? What would it take to get the right deal done?
To get it done, I honestly would be shocked if the Brooklyn Nets don't take anything less than Jaylen Brown. Whether a Marcus Smart or Robert Williams type of deal. And I think that if something like that were to happen, I think it'd be a mistake. I really do. I think the Celtics would miss out on seeing what this team would look like, because someone like Malcolm Brogdon, you know, being added into this thing, I think really amplifies their defense, which is the best defense in the league, you know, minus how things unfolded in those last 3 games of the NBA Finals, right? But at the same time, you want to see what happens there. And if you were to take a piece like that, whether it be Marcus Smart or Robert Williams, I just think it really takes away from what this defense can be. And I think that's a part of this whole thing that is going to ultimately sort of take the Celtics out of it. I mean, this thing is going to carry on for quite a bit. I don't think it's going to be something where like the Brooklyn Nets going to strike a deal within the next week or so. But I do think the Celtics, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they stand firm in the sense of, you know, keeping it as Jaylen Brown being the centerpiece. Maybe a couple of first-round picks, if that's what the Brooklyn Nets ultimately, you know, settle with, and a couple of bench guys. I just don't see the kind of offer that the Brooklyn Nets want out of the Celtics, you know, being what the trade is at the end of the day. Like I don't see it being executed that way if it were to happen.
I know Marcus Smart has a lot of defenders and a lot of people who argue his skills in the city here, but. Do you think a deal like of this caliber with Marcus Smart in it, do you think the Celtics could pull it off now that they have brought in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon? Do you think they would entertain the idea even further if that was the case?
If it was one of those Brooklyn Nets things, take it or leave it, I think they would entertain it. I think they would, you know, think long and hard about it. But I think that would be a conversation that they would have to have with Jaylen Brown in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, where his head is at. And this is with the assumption that they haven't had that, or you know, maybe they will soon. I know Jaylen's sort of been like many NBA players right now on vacation and enjoying their time off. But I wonder if that's a conversation that he's had with the organization. I wonder if they've had any sort of, you know, communication within this past week or so, just sort of touching base. But yeah, we have to just wait and see how this thing unfolds again, right? We have to wait and see and where the organization ultimately decides to do, because I do believe the Brooklyn Nets are going to try to get something done, maybe not specifically with the Celtics, but just in general in terms of, you know, filtering through offers and trying to figure out what the best one is for them.
What were your thoughts on their decisions to bring in Brogdon and Gallinari, and how much will they improve the Celtics going into next season, coming off an NBA Finals appearance?
I think it was big. I really do. I think they addressed a lot of what was missing throughout that NBA final series, whether we're talking about, you know, consistent scoring coming off the bench, or whether we're talking about, you know, sort of more defense in the backcourt to slow someone down, like, I don't know, Steph Curry, right, the MVP. I thought the Celtics didn't necessarily revert to bad habits, but they were just sort of outmatched in the most crucial situations of a NBA final series, right? I mean, I just, you know, you see those last 3 losses, the way they stacked up against one another, but in game 6 in particular, or at least you can look at even game 5, this team just missed that sort of someone that they could rely on off the bench, right? That constant scoring threat. And outside of game 1, you wanted to see that version of the Celtics pan out throughout the series, but it just never came back. And I think that was something that he did a good job of addressing during the offseason. Now you look at, you know, Danilo Gallinari, sure, he's you know, up there in age, and he's not necessarily, you know, someone that's, you know, in the middle of his best years, but I do think he's someone that can score double digits off the bench consistently, you know, something that Celtics always are missing, someone that can create his own offense. And then, of course, you know, I said plenty about Brogdon in terms of his, you know, what he gives you on both sides, on both ends of the floor. Also can go for 20 points on any given night and can really just challenge defenders on the opposing end, whether it's coming off the bench or finishing games. So I do think the moves are significant. And again, you know, Celtics fans right now, they're eager to see how that pans out. They want to see what this team looks like. They want to see what someone like Jaylen Brown is going to respond to almost winning the finals, coming two wins short of the NBA finals, how Jason Tatum's going to bounce back from the criticism, you know. So, you know, as you can imagine, a lot of Celtics fans in the city, they're not necessarily happy. You know, if I had to guess what it's like, it's certainly not, you know, 50-50 in terms of people wanting to see Kevin Durant in Celtics uniform and fans worried that we're not going to be able to, you know, see how Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum will respond.
Jumping to Summer League, what were your thoughts on J.D. Davison?
I thought he looked good. You know, I thought he looked good. I thought that he's someone that can, you know, really grow with his organization. He'll have plenty of opportunity in Maine playing with those guys. You know, and I think that's something that can really help him in terms of developing him as a player. I'm not quite sure he's ready to join this team or latch onto this roster at any point or give, you know, meaningful playing time within the next season. But I do think there's a lot of promise there, especially for someone who's selected in the second round.
What did you think of Danny Ainge's latest swindling of the Minnesota Timberwolves? I don't think it was as extreme as the KG Pierce deal, as I think Gobert still has plenty to offer, but he brought in a king's ransom once again. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's just shock value there because it's Rudy Gobert, you know, one of the premier defenders, and you wait to see what the other name is on the opposing side of that deal, and I think that's what took a lot of people by surprise. Danny's going to try to do what he does in terms of going into rebuilding mode for an organization. I just wonder if the Utah Jazz, you know, fans are eager as to how long this thing is going to take. But yeah, I mean, clearly they're hitting the reset button. But obviously, everyone's going to keep their eyes on the Donovan Mitchell situation and what happens there in terms of if there's something there going on with the New York Knicks or if that's somebody that's moved elsewhere and what pieces come with that sort of deal.
Looking around the rest of the NBA, who in your mind still has to make a move or two, and which GM do you think will come flying in from the top rope to execute a blockbuster?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mean, you always wonder what the Lakers are going to do, right? You wonder what the whole Russell Westbrook situation, if someone comes in there at the final minute, just sort of say, like, hey, you know what, I'm willing to put these pieces on the table, and the Lakers are going to bite on, you know, they're going to do their best in terms of trying to improve this roster. So I would probably say the Lakers. You know, I think we keep our eyes on this Lakers team, this organization, and see what they do between now and in the beginning of October.
Last question I have for you, Joe Sway. What were your thoughts on the latest NBA investigation into Philadelphia and their potential tampering?
Oh, man. These guys really want to win. Like, listen, I give them so much credit for this James Harden situation and you know, him willing to take whatever it takes, you know, for meeting in the middle, if you will, right, in terms of giving them that salary flexibility to maneuver this roster and boost it as best as they can. But, yeah, I just think a lot of it is just how competitive they are right now. You know, I think they look at the Celtics and everyone sees that championship window and they wonder where they fit in that. And I think the Celtics have gotten a lot of teams in the Eastern Conference sort of wondering, man, like, is this it? Is this the offseason where we can make the most or we're going to have to sit back and watch what Boston does again and at least make it to the Eastern Conference Finals? I just think the only caveat out of that situation is probably the Milwaukee Bucks. I do believe they're just thinking, man, if only Middleton was healthy, you know, if only that happened. And then the Miami Heat is interesting because I wonder how much they're still thinking about Kevin Durant right now. So it's still going to be, you know, wait and see for a lot of what's going to happen between now and, you know, the next 3 to 4 weeks. But the Eastern Conference, I would certainly keep an eye on these guys. And, of course, the Los Angeles Lakers and see how they try to boost their roster.
There he is. He's Josue Pavone of CLNS Media. Josue, where can listeners find more of your work?
You follow me on Twitter at @Joe_Sway. Man, we're at CLNS Media, man. We got a lot of stuff coming up for this offseason. I mean, you know, a lot of it has already been pumped out, you know, between Summer League and Kevin Durant stuff. But, again, we're keeping our eyes on this stuff. And we still got the podcast going, so you can follow CLNS Media on YouTube. And of course, the Cedric Maxwell podcast, which we do weekly. Max and I, we always have a lot of fun doing that. Celtics talk, of course, as you can imagine, NBA talk, and whatever else we want to talk about. We go all over the place on that podcast, the Cedric Maxwell podcast on iTunes, and of course, every other, platform where you can listen to podcasts.
Well, Joe Sway, I wanted to thank you again for joining us here on the Diehards. Look forward to talking to you next time.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
We'll talk to you next time, Joe Sway. In the meantime, keep it right here on the Diehards Show. We'll be right back here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Back here on the Diehard Show, presented by the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly, taking you up until 10 o'clock here on a Friday night. Austin Rodriguez has you producing the show out in Houston. Austin, how are you?
Doing pretty good.
Pretty nice night out there down there, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. Sun's out.
Oh, sun's still out down there. Sun just set up here in Boston. It's a little muggy out, but overall, after that heat wave we've been going through the last couple of days, I'll take a nice 75-degree night with a little heat. We just got off the phone with Joe Sway Pavone of CLNS Media. Good guest, and he's always keyed in with the C's. However, before we turn to the next hour, I want to throw out my MLB hot take. Chaim Bloom and the Red Sox recently came out and said that they don't plan on dealing Xander Bogaerts at this upcoming MLB trade deadline. Bogaerts is set to become a free agent at the end of the year. The Sox have not made any indication that they're extending him. Bloom also hinted that the Sox could be both buyers as well as sellers. My take? Pick a route. Pick a path. I just feel like trying to toe the line here and build on both fronts is a high-risk move that could take them a step or two back. If you're the Red Sox, you have the prospects to land a guy like Juan Soto. Go and get him. They're 3-11 in their last 14 games, however, and they have an opportunity to sell. Let's see if they do it. We'll be right back here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.